Welcome into the Sideline Sports Show with Bryce in DC here on YouTube, Facebook, X, wherever you are watching clips. You know, make sure you're subscribing to the show. We're growing slowly, getting the views. You know, 3 weeks in now, we're getting to where we want to be. And it's thanks to you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in here on another Sunday morning. And it's a big Sunday morning because we got a lot of stuff going on. We got some NFL. We got the college football national championship that we're going to talk a lot about today. We have two guests that are going to come on and talk specifically about the game. We have Daniel Flick from Sports Illustrated, and then we have Joe DeLeon from A to Z Sports to come on and, you know, talk about the game as well. But before that, DC, how we doing, buddy?
Yo, I'm doing good, man. It's good to see you. It's been a busy week for both of us, man. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff happening behind the scenes, and mm-hmm. you know, getting everybody excited about this podcast. Been kind of some hard work, man, hitting the ground running, but feeling good, man. We're recording. You know, as a Broncos fan, life is pretty okay right now. You know, at least my team made the playoffs. I don't know about yours.
Team made the playoff. Yeah, but it, you know, just didn't, you know, show up and when it mattered the most. Yeah, we don't need to rehash that again.
Okay,
I got my frustrations out. Okay. I've kind of, you know,
just testing the waters.
Yeah, it's likely that the GM and Matt LaFleur are coming back. I saw a story this weekend that they're both going to come back, and my temper has, you know, come down a little bit about it. It's, you know, we'll try it one more time. And we'll see how next year goes. Hopefully some changes are made in the offseason, but we'll see. We are a part of the Get Indiana Podcast Network. GetIndiana.com is your destination for everything Indiana, from fall festivals, spring festivals, summer festival, event coverage, blog posts, hidden gems in the state of Indiana. We are both proud Hoosiers, and we love talking about this state and the people that are in it, especially here in the northeast part of the state. Discover something new about the Hoosier State every time you go to GetIndiana.com. Make sure you subscribe to their weekly newsletter, and you can find our show on there. So we have every week, you know, we'll post our story about our episode that we produce every Sunday morning, like you are watching now. So you can find our show on there as well, and we are glad to be a part of the Get Indiana Podcast Network. DC, we have a lot to get to here on this week's show. But I think the star thing, attraction thing to talk about on the show is Indiana, Miami, down in Coral Gables on Monday night. And it's been everywhere about the Indiana Hoosiers, at least from our part of the state. And I just want to get your initial thoughts, because there's a lot of storylines going into the game. You know, you have the Fernando Mendoza storyline of how he grew up, you know, right across the campus from Miami, lived in Miami, wasn't recruited by Miami at all. And you have the storyline of Mario Cristobal bringing the U back. And it just feels like there's a lot. You know, Coach Cignetti, you know, this whole Indiana transformation in 2 years to go from a 3-9 season to undefeated and potentially the first team to go 16-0. What intrigues you the most going into Monday night?
What intrigues me the most is just how this Indiana Hoosiers team has just continued to stamp their name in history, man. I think they're the biggest story in all of sports right now. I don't care what sports you're watching. The Indiana Hoosiers are the biggest story. They've done the most damage. They've got the most impressive resume. I mean, beating Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship game, doing what they did to Alabama in the Rose Bowl, doing what they did to Oregon in the Peach Bowl. It's all about them, man. And this is what we live for as sports fans. You know, we live for, you know, the David versus the Goliath, and this is pretty much what you're getting here. You know, you're getting a powerhouse like Miami, who has so many teams that could go down to some of the best teams, including that 2001 team. And, you know, Miami's been pretty great program for a long time, where this Indiana Hoosiers team has done absolutely nothing in the last century that they've been in existence. Until this guy named Kurt Cignetti comes into town and takes over this mm-hmm. program and just puts together the biggest turnaround in sports history. I don't care, like, sports history, not even just football. It's crazy what he's done with this football program. And for me, that's just the biggest story, man. Can they get the job done? Can they finish what they've done and finish off this legendary and, you know, all-time great season with the victory and run the table. You know, I look at in terms of matchups, you know, as long as they slow down Carson Beck, which I think they're more than capable of doing. Look what they've done to other top quarterbacks, you know, yep. Oregon. Like, they can do this with other top quarterbacks, saying at Ohio State. They are very capable of slowing down high-level quarterbacks. So that's what I'm most looking forward to, is can they slow him down and frustrate him early and take an early lead? Because Miami's not really a team that's going to come back on you. When they're down, when they're already down a couple of touchdowns, if this starts off like that Oregon game, IU's going to hit the ground running. And so on the same token, though, IU has – these are big lights. These are bright lights. Yeah. You know, I don't care how great a team is, how great a program is. You know, it's not too crazy to think that a team can, you know, crack under pressure or fold when the lights are this bright. This is something that nobody in Indiana Hoosiers football history has ever done. So there's a lot of pressure that comes with this now, too. So how can they, you know, rise to the occasion in this championship game? Man, there's so many different storylines in this that I'm looking at, but this is all that's on my mind, man. All weekend, I'm ready for that championship game, and I'm hoping that the Hoosiers pull it out, obviously, me being a Hoosier. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, even though you are a Purdue fan, you know, at heart. So,
yeah,
but
that's right. It's always going to be boiler up.
No, I've seen like a lot of people, and I would like, you know, whatever happens, it's, I think, going to be good for, you know, us to talk about and stuff like that. And just to inform you guys, we will have a reaction video that comes out Monday late evening, maybe possibly Tuesday morning by the time you watch it. But we will have a reaction to the game, you know, because it'll be more than a week, about a week since we'll be able to talk to you guys next. So we'll record something, you know, short for you guys to watch, just to get our thoughts on the game for those who, you know, enjoy our content. So we'll make sure to keep you guys informed and have a little reaction video after the game concludes on Monday evening. And it should be a good one. We're anticipating that it's going to be a good one. It's an 8.5-point spread the last time I saw. And I'm excited. Like you said, there's a lot of different matchups, and I want to, you know, talk a lot about, you know, more of those matchups, as, you know, we'll bring on Daniel Flick from Sports Illustrated. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us. And I really like the backdrop, because you are in Miami.
Is that real?
And it's not a fake background.
So. No, this is a cool view, man. I wanted to add a little bit of character to the show, huh?
Woo!
Definitely.
We need it. We have none, man, so you brought it all.
Yeah, that's what we needed. Definitely. If I'm looking out the window right now, and there is snow on the ground, and there's not even a chance of that down there, and I bet you were happy to leave the Hoosier State and to go down there. It's much warmer, I bet.
Yeah, so I flew here. I did Indy to Detroit to Miami yesterday, and my flights got delayed both times because of ice. Mm. So I probably got to Miami about 40 minutes later than I was supposed to because of a whole plane de-icing. So, no, yeah. I joked with a few guys earlier that I flew out of the snow and I landed in the 70s. So can't complain. Can't complain.
Yeah.
So, so Daniel, to start off real quick, man, just to catch us up, you know, we're getting to know you. The audience is getting to know you. So when did you start covering this IU Hoosiers program? I know you cover basketball too a little bit, I think. So when did you start covering this team, and what led you, you know, what were some things you did prior to covering IU?
Yeah. So I did a little bit of stuff in 2023, 24 with our student paper. And then I also did some Atlanta Falcons stuff NFL wise last year as well, and then had some things kind of the stars aligned a little bit, if that makes sense. And I started doing SI stuff with Indiana back in the summer, so around, I think I started like July 15th officially. So this is technically year three. It's year one where I've had all of my eggs kind of pushed into it, though. So that part's been fun. It's been kind of a wild ride, obviously, right? So it's been a unique experience for sure.
Yeah, to have this be your first official year on the beat, you couldn't have picked a better time to, you know, fully, you know, cover the team. When did you, at any point during this season, and, you know, obviously they come off the last year of having great success, making it to the playoff, and when was it for you that you realized, okay, this could be a possible outcome for them to make it to the national championship? Was it early in the season? Was it not even till the Big Ten championship game? What was it for you that you finally realized, okay, this team might have a chance to go all the way?
I assure you that it was not after Old Dominion scored a 75-yard touchdown on the first play from scrimmage.
Yeah.
That I thought after the opening quarter, this might not be too long of a year. No, but I would say after Oregon is kind of when that all kind of clicked a little bit. I thought after Illinois, because a lot of the guys had said that week, like, this is where they'd learn kind of where they stand, and, you know, they won like 63-10, if memory serves. So by that point, you were like, okay, they're really good. But I think when they beat Oregon, it kind of – that was a step that they hadn't made last year, right? Like, they hadn't beaten an elite team, period, especially not on the road. They'd really struggled on the road. So I think winning those games, that game in that environment, kind of was a very clear step in early October. Like, okay, this is a better team than last year. They're already doing things that last year's team just couldn't do. So I think that was it. And then, you know, progressively – they came back after that game, and there's always a chance of a letdown, and they beat MSU by 25. They beat UCLA by 50-plus points, if memory serves, and then they beat Maryland by about 49 points or so. Like, I mean, it was – they were just rolling teams by the end, and then you just kind of start to see where it's headed. And then I think when they beat Ohio State, that was maybe the last straw of, like, they might actually be the best team in America. So – I'd say Oregon was a really big part of that, and then Ohio State kind of clinched it for me.
Yeah, so, you know, with this season, this magical season that they've had, you know, all the attention is obviously on Fernando Mendoza, rightfully so. I mean, the Heisman winner gets all the attention, but I've been telling Bryson, the listeners, that it's so much deeper than him, and I think that's why you start talking all-time greatest college football teams, because it's not just Mendoza. But coming from you, you're right there, you're reporting. What do you – and from your perspective, what makes this IU team so special in putting together this run?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I think the fact they never beat themselves, right? Like, this is – it's so unique, I think, in modern college football to find teams that – play so well together and have no egos, and collectively there's a blitz that Aiden Fisher had against Oregon, I think, that actually summarized this team so well. You have like an All-American caliber linebacker who blitzes from the A gap, and he angles his rush out and just cleans out Oregon's right tackle, and it opened up a lane for Mikhail Kamara to just flatline and get right at Moore. He got the pass off, but it was a little play like that where you see this is an All-American linebacker who is so unselfish, who's willing to do small things to help the rest of the team blossom. And that's really what this team is. I mean, they the way that Cignetti teaches, the way they practice, they're so intense. They're very detailed, and they don't make mistakes. When they make mistakes in practice, they immediately redo things. It's so unique, again, to have a team that's really, really good and never beats itself. Like, I mean, that's – to beat Indiana, you have to not only beat the top team in America, you have to not beat yourself while Indiana is stressing you and straining every part of you for all 60 minutes. It's just an incredible challenge that obviously there hasn't been a single team out there who's been able to hang in the ring for a whole 60 minutes. So, I mean, they're just relentless. They punch you and they punch you and they punch you until you break. And I think they have the confidence in punching you until they break, because they never break on their own. So it's just an incredible operation in that regard, how well run they are, how well coached they are. They're just a well-oiled machine with a lot of really talented players who play really well together.
What's the biggest advantage IU has on Monday?
I think that's a really good question too. I would say the fact that Indiana defensively has such a good tackling secondary and a physical defensive line, and they put you in conflict in so many ways that if you're Miami, they're going to try to run the football, right? Like, that's going to be what they're going to try to do. Yeah. And in the end, defensively has such a good front seven where they don't have to load the box to stop the run. I think that's a really big advantage. And I think, again, the other part that I don't think enough people have really talked about, as I mentioned, Indiana secondary tackles at such a high level. Those guys they're athletic, they're physical, and they're very, very reliable in the open field. And so I think if you look at, like, the playmakers Miami has on the outside are really, really good. The weapons they have are, you know, talented dudes who can really win in space. But Indiana's the corners don't miss tackle. I mean, it's very rare they miss tackles. They run to the ball. They flow to the ball so well. They break down really well. They finish really well. They'll hit you hard. They use space really well. I just think they do such a great job collectively. There have been a few coverage busts here and there throughout the year, but as a general rule, they keep everything in front and then they rally to it. And so I think Miami collectively, if you're trying to beat Indiana, they'll probably have to score, upwards of 20, 25-ish points to win. They're going to have to hit explosives. And IU has really shored up its back end quite a bit the last 3 months or so after a few issues early in the season, to where I think that's kind of the main advantage, the kind of area I look at, is they tackle so well that Miami is going to have to hit explosives. And I kind of think that's where Indiana wants them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you were – first of all, man, I definitely just want to thank you again. I don't think I did that earlier, but for coming on. I know you've had a busy last 24 hours, especially considering you just got done. I think, I don't know how long ago it was, but there was just Big Ten media availability. So you were just at the conference, talking, and getting, all the sound bites and stuff like that. So what can you tell us about Wizard? What is that? What does Wizard play?
I'm just as curious as you are. I have no clue. From what I gather, it's just a little lingo they're using to try to explain a concept a little bit easier. I don't know. I'm excited to see that part. They don't usually talk about plays or game plans or any of that stuff ahead of time. So I think that'll be interesting. I do think it's relevant too, in the fact that I think Corey Heatherman obviously has a lot of familiarity with what Indiana wants to run offensively. And yeah. If Indiana can add a little flair to it, I think that'll only help. So I don't know. I'm just as intrigued. I'm just as curious as you guys are.
Yeah. I seen that all over the timeline, man. Everybody talking, trying to guess what that is and what play that is. Yeah. So we'll see. And, talking about that play, as we look on the other side, as us being Hoosiers, we're obviously, very locked in with what IU's doing, but obviously this Miami Hurricanes team made it to the championship for a reason. Postseason sports is all about who's hot at the right time, and Miami's also hot in their own right as well. We had a great path to here. So looking at Miami, you said that what you liked about, what advantages IU has, what are advantages that Miami may have that Indiana may need to look for in this matchup?
Yeah, I think Miami's defensive ends are incredibly good. I think you look at Bain, Akeem Messidor, like the guys they have on the perimeter of their defensive line, that's probably the best pass rushing tandem in the country. I think Bain is second in the country in pressures, and I think Messidor is like top 10, top 50. He's not far behind. I think Bain was conference player of the year, and again, I think Akeem Messidor was like first or second team all ACC. Again, high level football players, guys who will be playing in the NFL for a very long time. And I think with Indiana, that right tackle spot's kind of been a bit of a revolving door this year. Part of it health-wise, part of it play-wise, right? So if you're Miami, that's where I think the real cat and mouse game starts, is can Indiana block whoever they put at left end across from the right tackle spot, who I would imagine will probably be Khalil Benson. I think that'll end up being the real key, is will Indiana have to chip? Will Indiana have to use a couple heavier packages? Like what is the adjustment there? Or will Khalil Benson play at a really high level that he's proven he can, and kind of mitigate that effect? So that's I think the real challenge is Indiana's played a lot of really good fronts this year, like a lot of great front sevens, but I don't think they've faced a defensive end duo as good as this one. So I think that'll end up being a really interesting challenge.
How much has, and there's been a lot of like speculation about when this game happens on Monday. I want to know, since you're down there and, talking amongst other reporters and stuff like that, how much does, Cignetti and potentially the NFL, how much of that is like an actual conversation, and like how much of that is like, do people believe that at all? Because I'm not asking you, do you think he leaves, but just how much of the air is that taking up down there?
Not a whole lot of it. He's not leaving. He actually answered that, I think, earlier today. He's very, very. He is a college dude. He's a very, very much so a college dude. And I think the way the way he operates, the way that his whole organization is around him, I think he's 100% committed to college ball. And that's kind of what he said earlier. And that's one of those topics where I'd take him at his word. Just, you know, again, his dad is a really was a really big role model for him. And his dad was an assistant coach for around 10 years and a head coach about 30, all at the college level. And so I think he'll end up being a college lifer. I think he'll probably – it'll probably take a lot to get him to leave Indiana if it ever happens, which I'm really not sure that it will. I don't think the NFL has really occupied a whole lot of his headspace. He's very good at compartmentalizing things and just locking in on whatever he has to, like at a higher level than a very high number of human beings on this earth, regardless of industry out there.
Finally, okay, every time we talk Cignetti on here, people hop in the comments – talking about Cignetti should go to the NFL. And I try to tell people all the time, Daniel, a head coaching job in the NFL isn't what it used to be, man. It's not as attractive as people may think it once was. Like, honestly, if I'm a head coach in college and I'm having success, like, why to go to the NFL to be on a string for 1 year? And if I don't win 8 games in my first year, I'm gone already? Like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to stay right here and build my program. So I don't blame him. Cignetti obviously is having success at IU, so why leave? And I wanted to ask you because, you know, we speculate on what we believe Cignetti, you know, what his strengths are as a coach. He has so many of them. Some people may say it's recruiting. Some people may say it's his preparation for the game. Some people may say it's his adjustments. Coming from you, what do you think makes Cignetti so special as a head coach and kind of what helped play a role and a factor in turning around this program in such short time?
Yeah, I think he's got a really good eye for talent, and it's not only player talent, it's all the coaches around him. It's everybody within his organization. Like, he can analyze things at such a high level that literally he's so detailed. He can pick up on very small things with people that he just knows. Like, he's got an innate feeling of, I like this guy's mentality. I like the way this guy moves. I like these small things about his skill set, about the way he loves the game, about the way he views the game. There's so many little things he picks up on people. He can really tell if you're passionate about things. And so I think in his eyes, if he sees your passion, he sees that you care, that's already a leg up for him. And so he gets guys who he knows he can mold. He gets guys who he knows care. That's part A of it. I think part B, because he has won, and because he's been around such great coaches and has such a great pedigree, there's an air around him that you should follow him. And he does an incredible job of imposing that on every aspect of the organization. He's so detailed down to like the very minute of when a team meeting, like 2:05 will meet, and by 2:08 we'll be looking at this play. Or I heard a story. I've got a story coming out on Monday morning about him and the way that he impacts his players off the field. And one of the interviews that I did for that, there was a guy at IUP that he coached who said that he would always come into the office the morning after games at like 9, 10 a.m. And he'd walk by Cignetti in the hallway, and Cignetti would already be like, hey, on play 12, you were wrong on here. You have to like have your hands inside here. Like, it's the best way to describe it is that he's a psychopath who people love playing for because he is so psychotic. He's so detailed. Everything about him is just so fine tuned that the entire organization around him, there's no mistakes. The habits are incredible. Everybody cares. Everybody's bought in. And so I think in an era of college football where you get a lot of people who maybe are just in it for the wrong reasons, who maybe are trying to, you know, catch a bag and not be there trying to win games and whatnot, he does a great job of surrounding himself with like-minded people, whether that be players or coaches. And then kind of instilling all of the things that he's learned, the habits, all of these principles into everybody around him to where it's just one well-oiled machine where everybody's aligned and everybody is just executing and operating at a really high level.
Yeah, I mean, to speak to the psychotic nature, I mean, he's had over 500 Chipotle bowls since he's been on campus at IU. So, I mean, he must just have him on speed dial over there at the local Chipotle. All right, what's your prediction? You know, how do you think things will play out Monday night, and what's your final score?
Yeah, I do think Indiana wins. I think it'll be somewhere in the vein of like 35-21, maybe 35-17. I think it ends up being a multi-score game. I think Miami's really talented. I've just watched so much of Indiana this year where I just struggle to – in my opinion, they are playing their absolute best ball right now, and they're peaking at the right time, and they were obviously elite throughout the whole year. But the fact they've been able to find another gear in the playoff is incredible to me. And they've just been very – they're on a mission, if that makes sense. And you really get that feeling when you talk to guys and when you see them and how they operate and how they're working, that they've kind of – this has been the goal all year. They haven't publicly said it. They will say it now. They'll acknowledge it now. This is always the goal, of course. But the way that I view it is they're humming on all cylinders. They are the best team in the nation. They never beat themselves. And I think those three factors combined together leaves me very confident Indiana will win. But again, collectively, Indiana's had stretches this year where you look at it and say, hang on now, they're not invincible. So it depends. And again, I think if Miami can create some pass rush, can move Fernando off his spots a little bit, can force Indiana in some heavier protections, I think that changes the game a little bit. And if Miami can hit a few explosives, you never know. But I do think Indiana wins, and I think it ends up being a multi-score game.
I like it. Alrighty. I like it. Before, because I don't want to ask any IU B-ball questions. I don't really, like. I'm sorry, they're terrible, Bryce. I'm sorry. Boiler up. That's all I gotta say. But before we get you off here, Daniel, you do great coverage on both. IU basketball and football. So I want to make sure that everyone can read your work and support you. So tell everybody where they can read your work one more time and tell them where they can follow you on social media as well.
Yeah, man. I will always plug the website. So si.com/college/Indiana. It's our Hoosiers on Sports Illustrated page. Twitter by Daniel Flick. Usually plug what I like on there, and I try not to overflow it, if that makes sense. I try to write what I think people would want to read. And I write what interests me, right? Because like if you're not interested in what you're writing about, then probably won't be that interesting to read about. So really appreciate you guys having me on. And, yeah, man, highly, highly appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. We told our audience last week that we're going to try to find somebody that has boots on the ground in Miami, yep. And we did. You heard the airplanes going on behind him, and you just look at the beautiful weather behind him. So, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on, and enjoy Monday night, all right?
Absolutely, guys. Really appreciate it.
That is Daniel Flick. He's joining us from Sports Illustrated. And gave some really good answers about what this IU program is about, and he has been following it on his first official year on the beat, and like I told him, I was like, you couldn't pick a better time to latch on to the Hoosiers and cover the football team this year. It would have been great last year because they were able to go on a little bit of a run into the playoff, but this year, like, you couldn't have picked a better time because look at where he's at now. He's down in Miami. So it's
very, 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 very true, man. I'm loving what the Hoosiers are doing as a Boilermaker fan. I just a little jealousy, just a little, a lot actually. It'd be great if Barry Odom could do anything. Hey, look, he's been doing okay in the portal. The portal's been okay.
Anything. Like, it's not like he's sitting on his ass doing nothing. Like, come on. Like, you just have to look at what he inherited, and it's going to be a slow progression for the Boilers. So that's for sure. Hey,
if Cignetti can do it, then why can't Barry Odom? Look what Cignetti inherited.
Yeah, that's all you can hang your hat on right now. If you're a producer,
so I look with jealousy. Okay.
Yeah.
All seriousness though, man, I am very happy for that program. Struggling program for so long, and what Cignetti's doing, they're building a powerhouse, man. I just hope for our sake here in Indiana that they can sustain it, because football is a lot more exciting to watch when we have a team to cheer for or playing in a bowl game, Notre Dame.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Just saying.
All right. Shots fired.
Shots fired.
Hey, but I will give Cignetti credit. He came out and said, I'm a college guy. Whereas Marcus Freeman, who had a press conference this past week and was asked, I think, at least three or four times about the NFL. And, he said he's, here, and he was only looking potentially at those jobs just for information, which okay. I don't know if I 100% believe you. I mean, I imagine you're probably sniffing around to see what you could be offered. Mm-hmm. It was just, I think they scheduled the press conference because it was like a day after Mike Tomlin said, I'm out. And it was, everybody was like, is this where he's going to announce that he's leaving? And I was like, I didn't think that he was going to leave this past year just because of what they have coming back next year and how they've loaded up with high school recruiting, how they've had a really good transfer portal class coming in after a really slow start.
Man, you know,
I was upset. What was that? Was that last week or the week before where you were
upset? Yeah.
Last week where they had zero. They had zero portal commits. And now they come back and then they pull in a haul of eight guys, including Purdue's kicker, by the way.
I've seen that.
Yeah. but it's
the one thing that was good.
Yeah. But it's a much improved, you know, sentiment around where the Notre Dame fan base is after last week, because shortly after our show, we didn't even get a chance to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I pulled up social media and, you know, Marcus Freeman is on a headline for, you know, some wrong reasons of potential battery. And you're thinking, what in the world? When you compile that with like the NFL rumors, no portal commits. And now there's a headline in the South Bend Tribune that he's, you know, there's a police report been filed. Like, the fan base was down bad. It was down bad last week. Rough. And then everything flipped in about 48 hours when you get, you know,
the video
comes out. There's nothing that, you know, there's no file. There's going to be nothing reported or filed against him, charged against him. And it was just like a big nothing burger.
I argue he should countersue.
I don't think he's going to do that. But I wouldn't be upset if he did.
Like, look, you're trying to put this on my name after I just set out a bowl game?
Right. Right. Like,
I already got stiffed on the college football playoff, and you're going to try to pull this? Ain't he messing with my son? Oh, no. Nah.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I watched. I watched the. You've probably seen the clip of where the team finds out that, you know, Miami was picked over them, and just the awe and the reaction and the stunned nature of all the players, and how Coach Freeman had nothing to offer. They took that away from them and in their eyes, and it just feels like it was crazy. I watched. Obviously, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I watched the documentary "Here Come the Irish" on Peacock about it, and just seeing that was just crazy. How you got the reactions right after that, and, you know, gives a little bit more in depth to the story. But yeah, it's crazy. But enough about Notre Dame. Enough about Purdue and how those teams are not in the playoff or not anywhere remotely near it. So let's. We have another guest coming on. Thank you again to Daniel Flick from Sports Illustrated. We'll have another guest coming on here in roughly about 30 minutes. Joe DeLeon from A to Z Sports. He covers college football on his show at Ruffino and Joe. And he also covers some NFL stuff as well. So we'll get into both of those things with Joe coming up in a little bit. But I want to dive a little bit more and get more of our thoughts on the game on Monday night, because there's some things that, you know, we touched on with Daniel that I just want to dive a little bit deeper in. And, you know, I think that for IU, it's going to be able – they have to be able to contain, like you said, Carson Beck and the run game. I think Miami is going to try to establish the physicality, the line of scrimmage in this game, and make everybody think that they are the superior team when it comes to the game in the trenches. And I just think IU has shown – the ability time after time, especially in this three-game stretch, that they're not worried about a team trying to run right at them. And they can limit the run game, limit the explosives, because if you look at Miami, the only thing that is explosive about their offense is Malachi Toney. Mm-hmm. I think if you can contain those big plays and the opportunities that might present themselves for Miami and contain the run game, you should win this game no problem. Miami has been a team that has not been as efficient as IU has, and it feels like that they're not as explosive or consistent or efficient on offense as IU has been here in these last three games, especially. That I just think Indiana should win this game, and they should win it. I don't want to say super comfortably, but they should win this game. I think they're the better team, and from what I've heard everybody else say is they all – a lot of people agree as well that they're just the better team, and they should win this game, you know, by a score or two.
Yeah, to me, that's being generous. Me personally, I know – I mean, I don't know if we're making official predictions or anything, but honestly, I see similar to the Oregon game. I'm just being honest. I see a lot of similarities on how the Oregon game was, how this game's going to be. Like Daniel said, I think this IU team, while Miami's playing great football right now, I think IU's playing their best football right now as well.
Yeah.
I think that Ohio State game really lit an entire new fire into this team and this program. And a lot of it, you know, obviously the X factor is going to be Mendoza. I mean, you know, quarterbacks pretty much, you know, lead the way when it comes to college football. And especially when it comes to the national championship, if you have a leader like Carson Beck or Fernando Mendoza, you're in a pretty good position. But IU's in a better position because they're number one in third down defense in the entire country. And I think that's what's going to be the big matchup, you know, that a lot of people don't even realize. Who's just number one on third down?
Yeah.
Or third down offense, my bad. Third down offense is what they're number one in. They run a lot of RPOs that I think is going to frustrate that Miami team very early. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough to guard, you know. And this is an improved team from last year, which was already scary last year. I just look at this IU offense, number one. Just looking at that side, I don't think Miami could match them scoring wise. No matter what, IU's going to score. IU's going to score no matter what, and it's going to come down to can Miami score to keep up. And IU's defense isn't going to allow that. IU's defense is one of the top in the country for a reason. And very, very, very underrated still somehow. I don't know why people overlook this defense so much, and which is a big reason why they're so successful. So I think that's what it's going to come down to. Can Miami keep up? Because IU's going to score. And I don't know if Carson Beck can do that. I don't know if he can consistently score. They scored a little bit in the Ole Miss game, but that's because Ole Miss turned the ball over. They gave them multiple opportunities to score late in that game. So I think it's going to come down to that, man. It's going to come down to, you know, that third down. You know, can Miami slow them down when the Hoosiers are the most successful team on that third down offensively? So I think that's a big thing that people need to watch in this matchup. I don't see Miami being able to sustain what they've been doing. They haven't played a team like IU yet. You know, they did what they did against Ohio State, but – you know, we already seen what IU did against Ohio State. They beat them as well. I'm glad it comes down to these two teams, though. You know, looking at these two teams, the way they've played in the final stretch of the season, I do think we have the two hottest teams, even though people weren't very happy that Miami got into the college football playoff over Notre Dame. I get it. But they have very well shut all of you up very quickly and have made this nice run and playing their best football as well. So I'm excited, man. I haven't been this excited about a championship in a long time. And it's not even just because it's IU. Obviously, that adds extra excitement that we have a, you know, in-state team playing for the championship. But just because it's a good story, you know, it seems like we've gotten the same teams, man. I get kind of bored of seeing the same teams, Alabama, Georgia. I get tired of seeing that, bro. Like, give me something new. And this is, look, for anyone that feels like me in that situation, this is definitely new. We got an IU team that's never been here, and it's been a while since Miami's been here. It's been a while since they've been, you know, this deep into the playoff run. So I'm very excited about this, man. The college football is up. It's bigger and better than ever. You're seeing more kids stay and, you know, staying for their 10 years. Some trying to get a 6-year eligibility and suing because they were declined. You know, things like that. But it's a good problem to have for college football because people are wanting to stay because college football is up, man. The stock is all the way up when it comes to college football right now.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that. And especially, like, you know, you're seeing, especially in these last probably like 3 or 4 national championship games, they've been, you know, different teams. You had Michigan that went the 1 year. And then you had Ohio State last year against Notre Dame, obviously. You had Washington get in a few years ago. It's not just been the SEC going up against another team where they're just, you know, far superior above, you know, say a TCU or an Oklahoma or some years Clemson. You know, Clemson hasn't even been a thought in the last 5 years. And whereas in the early, you know, late 2000s, in that whole 2010 stretch, I'd say, you know, they were in it just about every other year. And it was them and Alabama, and then you'd have a Georgia sneak in. And then things have really leveled out, I think, with the NIL, with, you know, stuff like that and the revenue sharing and guys, like you said, wanting to stay. Because for some of these guys who are going to be a late round draft pick, they could just stay one more year, get a big paycheck, and then, you know, potentially improve their draft stock and go back into the draft next year, then the following year. And, you know, they still had a chance to have an impact at the college level, maybe, you know, put their chance on winning a conference championship or a national championship or something like that. Whereas, you know, you never know with the NFL, you could go in and be cut, you know, in training camp. So I think for a lot of these, for the sport, it's really good to have new teams, new blood. And that's what you're seeing with, like, not just the championship game, but we saw it with the Final Four as well. You had Ole Miss in there who didn't even make the playoff and has never been to the playoff in the playoff era, has never really sniffed being in a national championship game in quite some time, maybe dating back to like the 50s or 60s. And it feels like, you know, we're having a new change in the sport where teams can't be loading up on recruiting classes every single year and stockpiling that talent, because a lot of these kids now, if you're not playing by year two, then you're going to leave and you're going to go trying to go to a place where you can start. And if you're not getting that opportunity, you're just going to leave and go somewhere else. And the teams aren't going to be as deep as they had in the past, where you can just take out the starting defensive line, come in with a whole new group of five stars, as, you know, the Alabama and Georgias did, you know, in the 2000s and late 2000s and 2010s. And that's just not this game anymore. Teams are not as deep. The playing field has leveled out, and it's great to see. I think we should be, you know, if you hate, I don't personally love how the transfer portal has, you know, just become one-offs, you know, where you can go from 1 year to the next. You can play at four different schools. I don't really love that, because it's just become wild chaos. And you could leave, and then what if you don't find a team that's interested in you? Then you're going to have to either go down a level or find another place. I think there will be potentially probably some contract language that makes it, you know, where it's multi-year contracts sometime in the near future, maybe within the next 5 years or so, that it's going to be.
I thought you would like to, like, I'm a little shocked. See, I like the transfer portal. I think that is part of what has made college football so exciting.
It's not that I don't, like, hate it or anything like that. I just think it's like, I think there just needs to be some guardrails. Just not saying you can't transfer. I would be fine. You have one free transfer, and then if you earn your degree, then you're a grad transfer. So you can up, you know, at least two times, you know, if you're over the course of your career. I think that might be something that might come to fruition in the next 5 years, or there's some limitation of that. And I've always been all for guys getting paid, getting your money. I'm not against that at all. I just don't think, because we're seeing like Malachi Nelson, who committed to, I think, Syracuse this weekend. He's on his fourth school, and it hasn't worked out in the previous three stops. Even he was a five-star coming out, didn't work out at USC, got buried on the depth chart, and then, you know, tried to move on, I think, to Boise State, didn't work out there, went to somewhere else, and now he's on to his fourth school, and where he's not even guaranteed the starting job, because I think Steve Angeli is still there, has eligibility left, and he'll probably be the starter if he's healthy come game one. And it's just like, Malachi Nelson just drifting away. I mean, do what you want, but I don't think it's benefiting him whatsoever in the long run. You know, that's my only thing.
Yeah, for a lot of players, you know, and I think one of my friends tweeted this on Facebook, who actually runs a sports agency that reps NFL and college players. He posted this. His name's DeMarcus Muhammad. He works with Javon Barnes and Dre Muhammad, coach at Northrop and works at Traction. And it's been in my head ever since he posted it, because it's been spot on. And it's made me think about this transfer portal. He posted and said, so many of these college football players that are entering the portal will never play another down of college football.
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate reality is there's so many kids that try to utilize that transfer portal and it ends up biting them in the end. I know a lot of kids too that enter the transfer portal that just end up going right back to the school because they realize, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. They realize, you know, either that or they realize nobody wants them other than that program. Yeah. There's some people that are like, yeah, I'm announcing I'm in the portal and get no other offers. And all of a sudden you see they're back at that team, at that program. And you just have to think to yourself, like, if I'm your teammate, like, how would I feel that you enter the transfer portal trying to leave me and then you only come back because you're forced to, you know? It's like, I think that those are the things that I think about with the transfer portal and when I think of negatives of it. But other than that, it's all positive to me because I think it's also what made college football so exciting is you see these guys, you know, like Nebraska's quarterback who's staying and, you know, getting his new opportunities. You see all these, you know, top level quarterbacks that are staying to try to, you know, I don't know their personal reasoning for staying and going to different schools to see if it works. Maybe they get, you know, raise their stock in the NFL draft. Maybe some of them, that's what they're trying to do. But for some of them, you know, it's part of what makes it exciting for me is it, you know, and what I mean by exciting is different teams are getting top level players that usually won't get them straight out of high school. Straight out of high school, you see the same teams all the time. Notre Dame, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama. They're always going to get those top guys. But when it comes to the transfer portal, I believe like Nebraska had one of the best showings of the transfer portal. And like they needed it because they don't scout and recruit well out of high school. They don't get a lot of commitments out of high school. So to me, the transfer portal gives more programs like that an opportunity to elevate their program. And Purdue too. You know, while Purdue isn't going to knock it out of the park with recruiting straight out of high school, especially with the success that IU's having, please.
Yeah.
Why would I come to Purdue? I can go to IU and actually win. Like, what are we talking about here? Or I could go to Notre Dame. Like, so, you know, it gives, and Purdue had a decent showing in the transfer portal as well. So that's what I look at with the transfer portal is it gives these, you know, lower level programs an opportunity to elevate their team as well. That's my argument for anyone that doesn't, you know, I know comments are rolling in. Anyone that has problem with the transfer portal, like, look, I get it. If you're old school and you just didn't grow up in the era of the transfer portal and once you made your commitment to the program, you stayed there. I get it. But like times have changed, man. Gotta adapt, bro.
No, I get it, and the times have changed, and I agree with, you know, a lot of what you're saying there. It's just like the bouncing around and playing, you know, four schools, and like
that's a bit much.
At some point, you have to think about, okay, yes, it's kind of like turned into, but it's not even the NFL because the NFL they have contracts where you have to stick around, you know. I think like at least a couple of years, you have to finish out your contract. You know, I know there's 1 year contracts for, you know, certain guys, certain free agents, but still like once you sign on as a rookie, it's like at least a three, four year deal. So it's just like, I'm trying to wrap my head around it because there's no education that this person could have gotten, no degree potentially, you know, what are you going to be, a general studies degree? Or, a very generic degree that is going to get you, you know, and it's like, how is that setting you up to be successful in life? And it goes, you know, it falls in that category of like, oh, stick it out through the program. And it's like that. And that's where it turns a lot of people off. It's like, what about the education? Well, a lot of these kids, you know, aren't thinking about the education. They see dollar signs. And, you know, some of these guys come from backgrounds where they need the money. And it's the unfortunate situation for some of those guys. So I understand it. And it's not every case is the same. You know, a lot of things change case by case and it's an unfortunate, but for the majority of players, they have, you know, and going around from one school to the next, it's just ridiculous. And, but it's crazy. I, I would like to see some things change, you know, slightly. I'm not, you know, overhaul the huge system or the guy, because I think we're at it. Like you said, the popularity of the sport has grown exponentially with the, you know, NIL and transfer portal and all that stuff. I think the interest is higher. And I'm not even like a big TV ratings guy. I could care less if people watch the game on Monday night. I don't care what the rating is going to be. I'm interested in the game, so I'm going to watch. I know people that are interested in the game, and I'll talk to them about it. I don't care if somebody in Colorado watches the game. I could care less. If they're not interested, fine by me. Who cares? I don't need the comparison with, you know, the NFL. And that's why I think this game should be being played on a Saturday night. Even though you might be going up against the NFL, I don't care. Put this game. This college football is meant to be played on Saturdays. Friday night for high school.
I agree. Yeah,
Saturday for college. Sunday and 100%. Sure, Monday for NFL. I mean, we're just getting it's getting too crazy. And you know, a lot of it sounds like old man yelling at clouds. But
I'm with you on that. Before we bring Joe on though, because we only got a few minutes till we bring Joe on, I want to bring this to your attention. I'm going to ask him too.
Yeah.
So. You brought up the Cinetti stuff earlier too in the NFL again.
Yeah,
I told you, Bryce, it's not going nowhere. I told you in the listeners. Yeah. No, but if you were say you're Kurt Cinetti, okay, say you're this top college coach, right?
Yeah,
and the NFL, they're trying to throw you that bag, bro. They're trying to look out, okay?
Yeah,
they're trying to make sure you're taken care of. They're trying to make sure Aunt Susie's taken care of. They're trying to make sure the kids, the grandkids, niece, nephews, they're trying to make sure y'all taken care of for life, okay? You have an opportunity to coach at any of these head coaching vacancies. Yep. Baltimore Ravens, number one. Pittsburgh Steelers, man, Tomlin. Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
Tennessee Titans. Las Vegas Raiders.
The Raiders.
Arizona Cardinals. Miami Dolphins, Cleveland Browns. You have a chance to coach one of those teams. Which one would you go to and why?
You almost listed them in like order of what I would go to.
Ravens,
I would probably say
one?
No. I said you almost. So I would go Steelers number one because they've had three coaches for like the 60 years. So you have.
Yeah, but that means expectations going to be high, bro.
Okay, but you have an ownership group that is going to stick with you even when you go 9-8 for like five consecutive years. And you know, and it wasn't like Tomlin was fired. He resigned, and which he might have been pushed. Yeah, he might have been pushed out. So
it was a mutual
agreement. Yeah, pretty much. But then I would go Ravens again because of ownership tradition. You know, you're a part of a Super Bowl winning organization, and then after that, it gets like a bunch of mid, like Miami. It'd be great for the weather, sure. Arizona, the same.
I was gonna say, I just looking at Daniel's backdrop earlier, looking at Miami. I ain't gonna lie, bro. I wouldn't mind being in Miami in January. I ain't gonna lie.
But it feels like Miami changes you. Look at what happened to Mike McDaniel from year one to year two. He became like some nightclub promoter by the time this season ended, when he was this nerdy coach that comes in year one, and then by the end,
Urban Meyer.
It's like what are we doing here, man?
Not Miami, but Jacksonville, close enough.
Yeah, well. I've heard some people have not some great thoughts on Jacksonville, whatever. But the Raiders, yeah, you're in Vegas, but I don't that ownership group.
Number one pick.
Yeah, that's like the one.
Get your quarterback too, Mendoza. He going number one.
Yeah.
Hey.
But I don't know. I mean, if you were to stick Mendoza in any other draft class, is he the number one QB? That's because like if you look at next year's draft class, like it's loaded. You have a lot of different guys. You have Jaden Maiava, Arch Manning, Darian Mensah, who might be on his way to Miami. I don't know if you saw that. He might be leaving Duke. You have CJ Carr potentially coming. Mm. If IU's quarterback, Josh Hoover, has a good year, he could potentially, you know, have his stock rise. I mean, Dante Moore is coming back to next year. So, yeah. Mendoza is doing the right thing in leaving after this year, even though I think he still has a year of eligibility left. But he's the clear-cut number one guy.
Not to mention Julian Sain will be back too.
Exactly. So, there's multiple guys next year that you're going to be competing with. So Mendoza's doing the right thing, and the Raiders are probably going to take him number one. They should. And the Titans, it's not a super appealing place. I mean, Nashville's a great city, but
I do love Tennessee, but not Nashville.
It's just like, man, that's just not
a, like not Pigeon a, Forge or something. Sign me up.
You big Dollywood person? Bro,
yes. I want to go right now. Just you even just saying that word. I want to go right now. I need those mountains right now.
Yeah, that was totally. I did not expect you to be a Dollywood person, man.
Dude, what? What a great time. I've been there three times already.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I just didn't know that you had that in you, man. That's great. It's a great revelation.
You've known me a long time now.
I do. I don't remember you ever saying you've gone, hey, I'm going to Dollywood this weekend, you know?
Nah, man. I been there three times, brother.
Yeah. I've been there before. It's a great time. So
If it was in Pigeon Forge or something, sign me up. I'll coach the Titans. I get to live in Pigeon Forge.
You can fly. You can fly back and forth.
That's a ways, man. And you know I don't like flying.
Yeah.
I got to drive, man, and that's a drive. It's five, six-hour drive. That's rough. So, Titans aren't appealing to me. So I was looking at the teams, man. Somebody asked me this the other day. I was out hanging out, getting some food, and we were talking just about the head coaching vacancies. And because what this person actually brought up was actually very interesting. They said, we're talking about the Browns because they were a Browns fan.
Yeah.
And they were trying to bet me money that Deion Sanders is going to be the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I was there's no way that's happening.
No way.
After what Colorado, now if Colorado came out this year and had a great year, like they've been having, then okay, he might get some offers. But nah, after this last year, I'm wondering if he's going to be at Colorado after next season. If you don't get it together, he lost all those players in the transfer portal too. We ended up getting that discussion. I'm like, and then we started talking about Cignetti and him going to the NFL. They were saying the same stuff that you and the listeners were saying last week, a crap that he should go to the NFL, just because they're – don't get me started. But anyway, we brought it up, and I did say that the Raiders would be appealing just because, you know, when you go to the NFL – you know, you like to be at least a little bit familiar with your surroundings, and him obviously going and having his own quarterback in Mendoza, who's going number one, would make things a little bit more comfortable for him, I'm sure, working with the quarterback he's already been working with for the past couple of years. So he knows him. They know each other. That would help. That would help them both, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Let's be real here. So I would say that would be appealing, but honestly, for me, the most appealing job out of all of these is the Atlanta Falcons.
What?
The Atlanta Falcons for me. So defensively, that Falcons team is almost set. Defensively, that team is set. As long as you keep all those guys, and most of them are signed for a while. You got Jesse Bates, who obviously Fort Wayne native, let's go. Okay. Snyder Panther, let's go. Okay. And that defense is just solid. That defense is what usually wins them games, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I believe that the Falcons are only a couple players away offensively from turning that around. I still think they need a quarterback. They need to figure that out, which all these teams do, really. None of these teams have a quarterback that's set. The Cardinals are getting ready to figure it out. I don't know about Lamar Jackson. They're already trying to get him out and run him out about him not being the starter. Is he a winner? Can he win games? Is he going to be able to take that next step? They're asking those questions. Cardinals are moving past Kyler Murray, already trying to figure that out. Dolphins, I don't even know who their quarterback is. Tua probably has a concussion right now while I'm talking. It's okay, that was messed up. That was too far. You calm down. Titans just took Cam, which
it's only year one. just didn't mesh with Brian Callahan. It's like
one of the worst year ones I've ever seen.
He just didn't have a whole lot around him, man. Like, there's...
I mean, I get it, but, like... So, like, he didn't look good at any point of the year. Like, there was never even one game where I was like, man, Cam Ward, I see why he was, you know... Mm-hmm. I see why he's a top pick. I see why he's up there. And, you know, I see it. I didn't say it at all, brother. Not even one game.
Yeah.
Not even half a game. Like, I never seen it. I was just like, I don't... And like you said, there's no weapons there. He's got no running game either to help balance it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that Titans team, that would be the last team I'd go to. Mm-hmm. I don't want anywhere near that Titans team. Nowhere near. They are, to me, they are further away than any of them. Shadur actually looked good in a couple games. So, I'll take that. At least they got something to work with. Titans.
And they have an elite defense. Like, yes. If you want to talk about elite defense. Yeah, it's not terrible when you think about the defense. I was in Cleveland when Green Bay played up there, and that was just an elite defensive showing, and it was a very ugly game because neither team could score, and obviously the Browns won in on a I think game winning field goal, and I was not happy. I could have some things about people from Cleveland to say, but I'm gonna keep it PG here on this show because some of those people are the absolute worst after their team wins. Just an advisory: if you're a visiting fan going to Cleveland, don't go.
I could say the same about you, Packer fans, though. Cheeseheads,
no, we're man. Nice. We're nice. Midwest, Cleveland. Like, I don't even know if it's like part of the Midwest.
It's still Midwest. Charm.
It's still Midwest, but like
we've had this argument since we started this show. You always say that.
But those people are just like not, they just didn't get passed down the Midwest charm, you know? It's just like those, it's ridiculous.
They got that East Coast swag.
Something. It's living on that crappy lake up there did something to them.
Well, while we're having this NFL head coaching vacancies discussion, I'll let you go ahead and introduce our next guest, and we'll get his opinion on this as he's getting set up.
All right, sounds good. Hey guys, we have what's up, Joe? Joe DeLeon from A to Z Sports NFL joining us. Rufino and Joe joining us on the show. And Joe, I'm a big fan of yours. I've watched you and Rufino, and I even know of your relationship with Ryan Roberts, who also worked for A to Z. So I watched the video of you guys talking about some Notre Dame stuff this past week. So big fan of you, Joe, some of the work that you do. So thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Yeah, no, of course. I'm fired up to be here with you guys and to chop it up. And I'm just really excited to dig into it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm super excited. Bryce has been talking about you since earlier this past week. I'm like, hey, man, we got to talk some football. Who you got?
Yeah.
He sent me you, and I'm like – oh, yeah. I was like, and wait a second. We already follow each other. So I've seen him before. I was like, it's perfect, man. Let's go. And so, like, before we dig in, I definitely want to bring you in the discussion we just got done having. And if I asked Bryce, I said, let's say you're Kurt Cignetti, okay, or at that level, okay. You got these NFL teams looking at you, all these head coaching vacancies, which are, I think, 8 right now. You got these head coaching vacancies open right now. You're Kurt Cignetti. Which team do you go to? What looks most appealing to you?
I think that there's, if he theoretically did make the jump, I know he on Saturday, which every college coach makes a statement. Marcus Freeman made this statement continuously of, oh, I'm not an NFL guy. And then, you know, not long after we'll find out that there's some sort of an announcement. we'll see what ends up happening here with
Cincinnati. Everything has a price.
Right. Exactly. It's a bargaining chip to say that you have no interest, but I think that there's two jobs ultimately that would be worth his while. The rest, I don't know if there's necessarily a fit. The first, I think, is pretty obvious, being the Las Vegas Raiders. I know it's not been a great run organization lately, but the opportunity to just step right in and immediately bring in Fernando Mendoza with the first overall pick, that would be a no-brainer. I think that Cignetti, if you are the coach who's commanding, you know, so much of the respect of these NFL openings, you'd want to go somewhere where you'd have the ultimate control. And it's not even just the control of being able to pick your quarterback. You're literally getting to pick the guy that you just had with you along this magical season. So that would be amazing. It's also a historic franchise that has not been successful. And he literally just did this with Indiana, turning them into a winner and completely blowing away everybody's expectations. He can now do that with a franchise that has not been a consistent winner and returning them to their glory. The only other one that I think that makes sense, and I guess you could kind of include the Ravens with this, but the Steelers, the track record of how few coaches they've had, I think is true to their ability to hire coaches, the ability to support those coaches, the infrastructure that they have built there. The only thing that I believe would maybe give any decision maker pause with taking that job is the quarterback situation is just a mess. They're picking in the back end of the first round. Aaron Rodgers is not expected to be coming back in the future. Do you buy into Will Howard? Is this a team that you think you're going to be able to swing a trade for any of the guys that are out there, maybe in unsettled situations? Are you going to go and trade for somebody who's a backup right now? Do you go get Malik Willis? I think that for how unsettled that aspect of it is, might turn some people away, but there's just the general brand of being the Steelers coach. Any coach is going to want to be there. So if Cignetti did make the jump, that makes sense. Not to mention the fact the ties that he has to that region.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't anticipate he moves on, but we'll have to see. We've talked about it for a couple of weeks here that, you know, it's potentially a possibility just because you know how the rumor mill gets going whenever some NFL executive says, oh, you know, just throws it out in the media. Like, you know, Cignetti might be a name where like it happened, like you said, with Marcus Freeman, it's just because of how they're winning consistently over these last couple of years. So, but let's focus here on the title game down in Miami. Is this the most improbable title matchup in the playoff era? I mean, for me, it is when you look at, you know, the matchup and where these teams and where these programs have been, it just in the most recent history.
I mean, I would say so, but I think that there's two ways of looking at that where, yes, absolutely, like Indiana getting this far, nobody expects it, and Miami having two losses in the middle of the year that reshaped our expectations for how they were going to perform during the college football playoff. It absolutely is improbable, but the way that I've kind of been looking at this is I think that this is the perfect example of what we wanted the expanded playoff to be. It's part of the reason also why I don't want any further expansion. I think that 12 has painted the picture for a perfect bracket with some minor adjustments for reshaping the whole 2G5 team thing. That's a whole separate issue. But I think that it has allowed for more opportunities for teams to rebound from mistakes. And I think that, sure, it's improbable that we've reached with these two teams, but now we have opportunities for programs that have really good rosters that might have hit a bump in the middle of the road to recalibrate and readjust. I think that now we're starting to see whichever team is going to be able to end the season the hottest is going to be the team that's most effectively positioned to go on a run. I know that this is kind of separate from the conversation of or the talking point that you just asked, but it also, I think that like we're landing in this spot now where do we need to revisit how these teams are being seeded and the whole bye situation? I think that for all of that and how we've seen from last year, I think that it's shaped up for what has made a lot of sense for these final two teams and how far they've gotten.
Yeah, I mean, two programs that like Bryce was saying, you know, especially IU, not a lot of success in that program's history. And you have Miami who hasn't been here in what seems like a long time. And so you look at these two head coaches that have, you know, kind of turned these programs around. Which coach do you trust the most going into this championship?
I guess I trust Cignetti the most, but here's the thing is that Mario, I said that I didn't trust Mario going into the Texas A&M game. And I have been, before that, I was all in on Mario. I thought that before they lost to Louisville, that he had kind of figured things out and he's figured out his identity. Winning the Notre Dame game was his biggest win at Miami. And that was usually you get that big win out of the way. And that is how you end up starting to build momentum. The thing is, though, is Cristobal has had that track record of not performing well late in tight games like this. I think that there's going to be like preparedness. I think that they're going to be prepared. I think that the fact that so many people publicly are doubting them and people have doubted them through this entire bracket, it's kind of going to do away with that. I would be shocked if they started slow. Like the last game is a really perfect example. You have the entire SEC world saying that, oh, Miami lost to these crappy ACC teams. Ole Miss is going to blow past them. Trinidad Chambliss is going to make victims of that defensive line. And, you know, they proved that they've got the physicality that the SEC has always had. They punched them in the mouth up front. I think that the Ole Miss game, the Ohio State game, everybody thought that that game was going to be a walk. Everybody thought that they couldn't beat Texas A&M has changed our belief in that Cristobal can't get them ready. But at the end of the day, the coach that you have to trust more is Kurt Cignetti. Kurt Cignetti has, for every single battle that they've had, not only have they been ready to go, they have also dominated their way through this path. And ultimately, they did get matchups where they were facing off with teams that were battling through injuries that I think accentuated some of the imbalances of the teams that they faced with Oregon and with Alabama. But the fact that they have seen blood and they've just attacked, they haven't taken their foot off the gas, speaks to how prepared and how ready to go his team is. So I think that the edge goes slightly to Cignetti, but I don't think anybody should believe that there's some sort of a gap, because both of these coaches have reached this perfect crescendo of what has been, you know, great seasons for both of them.
Yeah, I'm just interested to see if we do get late in the game and where Miami might have a lead. Does Mario Ball creep in? You know, does, you know, that conservative nature, you know, kick in for Miami? I think they're, you know, maybe have been able to prove themselves otherwise here, like you said, recently, and especially in that Ole Miss game where, you know, they needed a drive. And it feels like every time they're in a big game, you know, and probably wouldn't classify SMU or Louisville a big game, but like you mentioned, the Notre Dame game, these playoff games, they've had these drives late in games when they absolutely needed it. And I think that has kind of where the narrative has really, you know, shifted with this Miami team and under Cristobal, where, you know, last year, you go back to last year and they would, you know, get very conservative and get tight and then make the mistake, you know, the back-breaking mistake. And it feels like they haven't really done that, because I've been waiting for Carson Beck to make that mistake, and he hasn't done it yet so far in the playoff.
Right. And what really impressed me the most, and one of the things that I kind of kept saying when I didn't think that they'd be able to beat Ohio State and be able to beat Texas A&M, one of the things I kept saying is, well, the team that they're facing has the edge at quarterback. I just didn't know if I could buy into Carson Beck. He has been mistake prone, and he has made brutal errors in those late game situations. He did against Louisville and against SMU. But the bigger question that I had is, if the game was on the line, do I trust Carson Beck to deliver on a clutch throw when he needs to? And I thought that final drive against Ole Miss was so perfect for him, because everything that he was asked to do fit exactly what he is capable of accomplishing. It's not like, and I'm not trying to like downplay the drive, but I thought that Shannon Dawson called the perfect drive there to understand, hey, let's keep everything in front of us. Let's be very methodical. We don't need to rush this. Carson Beck, historically, when he's played his worst, he has gotten out of his element because he has tried to do too much and he has been pressing and rushing. So it was all just chunk, 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 rip apart, and then put yourself in a position to win. And it kind of plays to this just overall identity of Miami, where we're going to grind you down. We're going to take a bite of you every single way until we end up finishing the job. That final drive, I think, has completely changed how I look at this game overall, too, because as much as he's facing a really good defense and as much as he probably will have a turnover going up against just a almost perfectly fundamentally sound defense for Indiana, I think that he just reminded us that, hey, there is a clutch version of Carson Beck. If it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter, I wouldn't completely doubt him, and I wouldn't just assume that he's going to falter.
Yeah, good stuff. So something that I've been bringing up the last couple of weeks that I want to get your thoughts on. So let's say, which we're Hoosiers ourselves, so we're, I guess you call us homers, I guess. I'm a Purdue fan, so like I guess I'm kind of cheering for IU, not really. But if you're going to represent the state of Indiana, you better do good, okay? But I, all seriousness, if IU runs the table, they complete it, they complete the sweep, they go undefeated, where would you put them in terms of all-time teams? Because I said, like, look, in terms of what I've seen this year, you know, everyone brings up the 2001 Miami team. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of them went on to be Hall of Famers in the NFL. No big deal, whatever. But what people I don't like that comparison, because, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that that team was better than this team. They may have went on and been better, you know, individually, but in terms of, like, together, this IU team, I think if they put it together in this championship game, I personally believe their resume of the teams that they beat, players they went against, I think this has to go down as one of the best teams ever. Where would you put them when this is all said and done?
I would just slightly separate the, I think that this would be the most, this would be the most, this would be the best season ever. That was how that I think that I would look at it in terms of what they were able to accomplish despite not fitting the typical criteria to have gotten to this point and to win a national championship. If we're talking best teams of all time, I have to put the 2019 LSU team ahead of them because of the amount of ranked teams that they beat along the way, the amount of top players, not even the guys that are going to go on to, that potentially could be Hall of Famers in the NFL and went on to be high draft picks. You just had every position group was had a player on it that was one of the best in the country that year. I think that the 2020 Alabama team and the 2001 Miami team fits that same description. But at the end of the day, where like I look at the best season ever, I think that this is the greatest coaching job ever, and nothing is going to touch it for the fact that nobody had any belief that a brand like this would get this far, would get this good this quickly, would be able to beat the teams that they did to get this far, and to have done it with mostly guys, actually pretty much no guys that were premier five-star recruits. I think, though, the one thing that makes it hard for me, though, to commit to this belief that it would be better than any of those other top teams that did some unreal things, is they just weren't challenged as much. I know that's kind of hard to relitigate that to a degree because of the fact that like they can't help who they played. They played a much smaller sample size of like really, really tough teams to get to this point. I don't think what LSU did that in 2019 is such a ridiculous year to have the talent to have dominated everybody along the way and to have played that many top teams. I think that that creates just a separate bucket of separation. But I think that your logic, though, I think is great, because I think that it's been generally flawed that when we have this discussion, it's just everyone just yells and goes, oh, that 2001 Miami team had so many good players. Well, it's a little bit more nuanced than that, than just having that discussion like that.
Yeah, I would agree with what you're saying as far as the season. Also, we're like comparing different eras, because that was a 4-team playoff era. This is the 12 team. So it's like it's like the NBA comparison, like in the Jordan and LeBron and stuff, and like it gets all like you know up in the air, and you could just like
Bill Russell versus Shaq.
Right. Yeah, so like whatever your like your favorite is just you're probably just going to defend that the most. So yeah, I definitely agree with you know a lot of what you said there. What's the matchup on the field that you know you're most looking forward to watching and may go you know a long way in deciding this game, because you brought up the you know the final drive for Miami against Ole Miss, and they're probably tired because they were on the field for a majority of that game. And I look at Indiana's defensive front, and if they can get after Carson Beck, especially in that fourth quarter, and don't allow him and speed him up and all that stuff, that's where I'm looking forward to the most, is can IU generate pressure and speed up Carson Beck. But what's the matchup that you are most intrigued in watching on Monday night?
Yeah, for me, it's the battles along both lines of scrimmage. I said this in my immediate like gut reaction after Indiana won and we knew what the matchup was going to be, was, God, the pads might be cracking so hard in this game that it's just like it. You can hear it through the TV. I think that this is going to be a really physical game right from the first whistle. I think that that is going to be a matchup whoever does end up breaking through and really, really is able to punch the other team in the mouth the most is going to win this game. And I think that that matchup too, a lot of people I believe are somewhat getting wrong. I think that Indiana has proven that, again, they're the most fundamentally sound team. They're the most technically sound team. They're very rarely out of position on both sides of the ball. They're hat for a hat when they're blocking. They're downhill. They're not really allowing much separation or any big plays after contact. Like they're just not letting any broken plays occur. But the difference here for what Miami brings to the table is that they do have the better O-line and D-line. They have an O-line and a D-line that is headlined by a first-round player with Reuben Bain on their defensive line and with Francis Maui-Noa on their offensive line. And I think both of those squads, if they're able to play to their potential, that is what keeps this game close. I ultimately think what wins Indiana the game are those fundamentals, is there just that precise nature of not allowing any big plays to break through for Miami in the run game or from Malachi Toney. But this game, to me, I think is going to be much closer. Miami covers because of the war that is going to happen in the trenches.
So what's your official prediction when it's all said and done, and how do we get there?
I think Indiana wins this game. I think that it is going to be a 6 to a 3 point game. I think that it is going to come down to final couple drives in the fourth quarter. My biggest bit with this and why I don't see a blowout happening, the blowout happens if Carson Beck has early turnovers and they get pressure and they get sacks and short fields. That to me is, as we've always seen, and Miami has done this where there's been mistakes like that, Indiana immediately blows the game open and they end up turning it into a domination. It's what happened against Oregon. They were just off by a little bit and they turned that into a gigantic margin. But why this game ends up being close is I think that Miami is going to keep this game slow. I think that they're going to run the ball a ton like they did against Ole Miss. I think that they're going to be able to get pressure on Mendoza and potentially produce a game-altering turnover. But where Indiana ends up winning and creating extra separation to win this game, maybe on one of those final drives in the fourth quarter, is being able to attack Miami's secondary. I think from the very beginning, we're going to see a lot of those jump balls that they love to throw to Becker and to Surratt, especially with Xavier Lucas out of the first half with the targeting penalty that he suffered against or that he committed against Ole Miss. So I think that Indiana wins because they've got that matchup that they can exploit, and Miami's going to keep the game slow. It's going to keep it low scoring, and it'll end up being decided in the fourth.
Joe, like I said, I'm a big fan of your work, and make sure you guys catch him on AZ Sports, Rufino and Joe. And thank you so much for joining us here on the show, and I hope we have you on sometime, you know, talk more NFL. I know you do a lot of NFL Absolutely. Coverage as well, and thank you so much for joining us on the show here today.
Yeah, this was a blast. I appreciate you guys having me on. I'm looking forward to see how the games go and where the game goes, and looking forward to chopping up again soon.
All righty. Thank you so much, Joe. Man. That is Joe DeLeon joining us from A to Z Sports. Make sure you follow him on social media. You can check his show out, Rufino and Joe, as well on YouTube. They do a lot of great stuff, a lot of back and forth, a lot of arguing between those two guys that are, you know, some of those social clips going around, and they like to have fun over there, just like you and IGC. For you, what is your prediction, final prediction for Monday night?
I think they frustrate Carson Beck right away. I think that's how that blowout happens. I think it's going to be similar to the Oregon game, man, to be honest. I'm going to go 45-21.
45, wow.
45-21.
That's a lot. I think IU wins, and I think they cover the spread, but I don't think it's more than, you know, 10 points. I'm going to go 31-21. I think that IU wins. I think they gain control early, and Miami is just kind of scrapping their way back in this thing. But I think IU, and just how efficient and how consistent they've been, I just think IU is going to take control some probably late in the first half and just, you know, kind of carry that throughout, just because that's what they've done. They've been a dominant team and they don't look back. I mean, if Miami gets down, I don't think that they can make it'll make it hard for Miami to come back. If Miami goes up, I think IU has a good chance to come back, just because of, like I said, with when we were talking to Joe about, you know, the coaches you trust. I just think Miami, once they get up by, you know, a score or two possessions, they kind of, you know, go into a shell a little bit, and they don't really, you know, try to put the pedal to the middle. They kind of go conservative, and that's, I think, where Indiana would have a chance to come back in that game. And I just trust Coach Sig to have this team ready to jump right from the beginning. So I just think IU wins 31.
I personally feel like, and this is, you know, this might ruffle some feathers. I don't care. Like, you know, I don't care. But I have personally felt the Big Ten championship was the championship game. Me personally, I felt like that was it. That was the championship. Those were the two best teams in my personal opinion. And once that happened, I was already set that IU was winning.
I think some Miami fans would disagree with you, just because they beat Ohio State, you know, as well.
Yeah,
because
Ohio State was already like, all right, bro, like,
all They're in the playoff. Already,
they were already like, all right, man, like we just lost. No, all seriousness though, in terms of matchups, I personally felt like those were the two best teams. Miami got hot at the right time. I still feel like top to bottom, Ohio State, IU were the two best teams, in my personal opinion. That's why I don't think this game is going to be very close. But you know, crazier things have happened. I've seen we've both lived to see it, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm excited. I think hopefully it's not a blowout, but I think it will be. I'm just hoping it's a close game throughout. I think. That's what we're all, you know, if you don't have a dog in the fight, you just want the game to be entertaining. And I think that's what most people want, is for the game to be entertaining. It's going to be like a lot of, especially on the Miami side, there's going to be a ton of star power there. You know, like you mentioned, that 2001 team, Michael Irvin has been on the sideline and been featured in just about every big Miami game this year. And he'll be over there acting crazy per usual. And I think Ray Lewis was there on the sidelines last game. We'll see. Well, maybe we'll see the Rock. I think we can get the Rock out there. I mean, he
That'd be great. Played.
Yeah. So there'd be a lot. I mean, yeah, he was on the Miami team. I don't think he played for too long.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I think he played a little bit.
I've seen pictures of him in a jersey. I've never seen actual footage of live game of the Rock playing. Have you?
No, but he would have played like back in like the 80s, like late 80s, 90s, somewhere around
there. So there's not video footage available?
No, there would be, but I just like how often
I can I can watch Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain skyhook over 6 foot one centers, but I can't watch The Rock play college football.
Rock playing at Miami. This is great radio.
I can watch Babe Ruth hit a home run in Yankee Stadium from like 100 years ago.
Okay, there. I'm watching some clips. Yeah, he played. He played. He played against FSU. So
okay.
All right.
Send it my way. I've never seen him play. So
all right.
Tag me. Whatever you got to do.
Tag you. Oh geez. All right. We will be back either late Monday or early Tuesday. And you watch on YouTube, we will have a reaction video to the national championship game. We'll be watching along with a lot of you guys as well. And we'll have another video up coming up tomorrow or early Tuesday, like I said. So make sure you guys subscribe and put some comments in. You know, what are your predictions for the game? Follow us everywhere, like it says there on the screen, Bryce and DC on Facebook, X, Instagram. You can follow us there. Again, thanks to Get Indiana for being a part of their network. Follow everything that they do at Get Indiana. You can follow Nate Spangle on social media. He does a lot of great stuff as well. A lot of great interviews on their podcast channel. And we're glad to be a part of that network. Make sure you subscribe to their weekly newsletter, which you can find at getindiana.com. You can find our show there as well. So we will see you guys late Monday, early Tuesday. If not, we will catch you next week.